Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
You're listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org, broadcasting every Monday night from 10 to 11. Sometimes it is a gift from the Holy Spirit. Sometimes it's a huge mistake. Tonight I feel like it's a gift. So here's what we got going tonight. We got a ton of stuff to talk about. One, Christians are having a hard time in Syria. There seems to be kind of getting the boot, really. There's a lot of deaths. They almost feel like they're targeting them. And it kind of brought me to a broader question about a world-mindedness that I think as an American don't generally tend to have, and almost their perspective back at us. You know what? I realize that there's generally a negative opinion, mostly maybe about America in general. But I'm not so much interested as their thoughts about America as I am, you know, how those thoughts reflect to Christianity. You know, as followers of Christ, you know, did we end up in a big cog called America where we don't we look like we're not following Christ just merely because of where we live? And so, I thought we'd talk about that a little bit. The article's, it's kind of wordy. So I'm going to try to truncate it just a little bit. But we're going to talk a little bit about that. There's an article on the CNN Belief blog about millennials leaving the church. That is people that were born, say, 2000 and up. I think we all kind of have a semi-bit of a guess on why some of this is happening. But the man who wrote it, I don't believe, is a Jesus man. And so we'll get his take on it, what he thinks, and where he thinks we're kind of cheesy. One of the things that he mentioned is the marriage of Pat Robertson and YouTube. Is not doing the Christianity community much of a favor, and so we're gonna talk about that. We got some Pope style advice, a little bit from Rick Gray, maybe a little bit from me. We got some Dear Live from the Path, and actually we're gonna open it up just a little bit. We don't do this a whole lot, but I'm gonna ask for a couple quick prayer requests. John Bova III, generally our solid wingman, he's out tonight. He's just not feeling right, and so I if you guys just wouldn't mind saying a quick prayer for him, and that he can get up and rock, and he can be thinking straight, and everything can kind of settle out there for God's glory. And so if you wouldn't mind praying for that, and also our captain of the ship, Ben, is on his way back into the country, and if you just pray for safe travels for him. Frankly, the show will be lesser because they're missing, but then increased because of our special guests. And so tonight you're joined by Mr. Dan Hudson, Rick Gray, Dave Guaran, and Tessa, who will be jumping in to give us some advice on later tonight. So we're going to get started. We'll go and talk about a little about this Syria thing. Now, I'm going to kind of give you a heads up. I'm not a global thinker. I'm not good with general world. I have a general idea of where Syria is, but not a ton. I just don't quite think like that. So when things come up and I say them incorrectly, that's probably the reason. So it says Christians are being singled out and massacred from Pakistan to Syria to the Nairobi shopping mall. It says Christians in the Middle East and Africa are being slaughtered, tortured, raped, kidnapped, beheaded, and forced to flee the birthplace of Christianity. One would think this horror might be consuming the pulpits and pews of American churches. Not so. The silence has been nearly deafening. As Egypt's co-ops have battled the worst attacks on the Christian minority since the 14th century, the bad news for Christians in the region just keeps coming. On Sunday, Taliban suicide bombers killed at least 85 worshippers at All Saints Church, which has been there since 1883. Christians were also the target of Islamic fanatics in the attack on the shopping center in Nairobi that killed more than 70 people. The Associated Press reported that the Somali Islamic militant group Al-Shabaab confirmed witness accounts that gunmen separated Muslims from other people and then let the Muslims go. The captives were asked questions about Islam. If they couldn't answer, they were shot. In Syria, Christians are under attack by Islamist rebels in fear and extinction of Bashar al-Assad fall. This month, rebels overran the historic Christian town of Malula, where many of its inhabitants speak Aramaic, the language of Jesus. That's pretty cool. Reported that the residents of Malula called her fiancé cell and was told by a member of the Free Syrian Army that they gave him a chance to convert to Islam, and he refused, so they slit his throat. Lila Gilbert is the author of Saturday People, Sunday People, which details the expulsion of 850,000 Jews who fled or were forced to leave Muslim countries in the mid-20th century. The title of her book comes from the Islamist slogan, first the Saturday people, then the Sunday people, which means first we kill the Jews, then we kill the Christians. Gilbert wrote recently that her Jewish friends and neighbors in Israel are shocked but not entirely surprised by the attacks on Christians in the Middle East. They are rather puzzled, however, by what appears to be the lack of anxiety, action, or advocacy on the part of Western Christians, as they should be. It's inexplicable. American Christians are quite able to organize around issues that concern them. Yet religious persecution appears not to have grabbed their attention, despite worldwide media coverage of the atrocities against Christians and other religious minorities in the Middle East. Blah, 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 ton of stuff here. Finally, it says they were talking about a couple representatives from California, and named one of them named Wolf, and Wolf has complained loudly of the State Department's lack of attention to religious persecution, but nobody's really listening. When American leaders meet with the Saudi government, where's the public outcry demanding they confront the Saudis for fomenting hatred for Christian Jews and even Muslims minorities, where is it? Why are they not upset? Basically, the article kind of goes on to say, look, there's a lot of persecution against the Christian nation. A lot of it, they might be kind of targeting it towards the Muslim faith, which some of it is attributed to, some of them not so much. That, you know, depends on which pen is writing the story. But really, I think what they're getting at is the Christian, we have Christian brothers and sisters that are they're basically being slaughtered for their faith, and I don't know that I've given it much of a thought. I see it in the news, and I'm like, boy, that sounds terrible, but I don't know that it really struck me. And actually, what it borders on the question for me is there something to do? Or, I mean, it's biblical. Like, we knew this was coming, right? That persecution was going to happen. Are you Job style, just happy that it's not you?
I think it's been happening. I mean, since the first century, it's nothing new. It's been going on. It's pretty intense right now. I pray regularly about it. I've talked about it at church, and people kind of have this glazed eyes. They look at me like, you're just silly. That's not going on. And it's like, well, yeah, it is. Here's pictures. Well, no, that's something else. I've been asked small group leaders, and when we had questions based on persecution just with a couple months ago, and I said, well, how was your small group? And like the general thought was, well, that doesn't really happen here. I'm like, really? That's it? That's all you, I mean, really? For one thing, yes, it does. But secondly, do you see your brothers and sisters in Christ? And you're like, yeah, well, as long as we have, basketball for our kids and the tennis court at the church, that's really all I care about.
I mean, isn't that such an odd mindset, I guess, right? Is it just an odd perspective to take that, like, if it's not happening to me, it's not happening to anybody? Do you think we
or
generally...
Or if it's not happening to me, there's nothing I can really do.
Right.
And actually, here's the flip side of my question was kind of turned over to Dave and Goran is are we seen like that? Is America in general? I really want towards America, but like, are the Christians of America basically seen as, watered down? Not really much worth their weight?
Seen by whom?
Well, I would say probably the Middle East in general, or maybe other parts of the world. Do they even care? Do they even have an opinion either way? In your experience?
Well, first of all, we should say how would you know? You've lived there.
Yeah, I mean...
You're not like just a guy down the street, like I am.
No, yeah. I spent a couple of years in the Middle East. Most of my neighbors and friends are from the Middle East. So,
sure.
Just thinking about it from their perspective, they very much think about America, but they think about American culture, and I don't know that they have a real accurate understanding of how Americans see them. And the divide between how they think Americans see them and how we actually see them is almost as great as... the divide between the American way Americans look at themselves and their lives and the way that they see the Middle East. I mean, it's like a totally different planet. And so it's almost like it's just, like you're saying, not really happening. I imagine most of the people in the Middle East think that we're closer to the cognitive forefront of, or that their lives are more on the forefront of American minds, and most Americans don't really care. Other than when we get involved in wars,
I'd say that's probably true, right? That's true on my end, right? Like, it's not that I suppose that I think, good or bad either way. I just don't really think, mm-hmm. I just assume that, what goes on, I think that's probably a little bit of a selfish perspective, obviously on my part. Can most of this be tied to, what America represents, or is it just a plain old fashioned, your God against my God?
It's not always just something as simple as just what's the religion and is it our religion versus their religion. I mean, politics is a huge part of it as well. And probably unfortunately, the bigger driving factor between East and Western relationships is the politics involved, not so much the religion involved. It's more...
Is it deeper than I think?
Probably, yeah. The thing is, the reputation of American Christians is being developed in the minds of Middle Easterners by the American government. In other words, it's our government that's basically standing for what America, the Christian nation, means in the Middle East.
Well, that's a terrible representation.
Well, that's what happens when the church doesn't get involved.
Well,
we're basically outsourcing our reputation.
I agree with that on a lot of fronts. Not only our the way we represent ourselves to people outside our country, but frankly how we represent to people inside of our country. Right? We do that a lot. We leave it a lot up to like the bigger organizations and the people that we think have firepower. And really, it's best represented by you sitting down and talking to a guy. You know, like, I mean, that seems a lot more honest, a lot more real, and not near as manufactured. People could smell a pamphlet coming a mile away.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They hate pamphlets. Mm-hmm. I don't even know why we still print them up. Like, people are like, here's the deal. I had a guy at the gas station give me a gospel tract, right?
Right.
And so I was just walking to my car or whatever, and he's like, and he didn't say anything. He just handed it to me and let me walk. And I looked at it, and I'm like, it's about Jesus. And so I turned back around at this guy. I'm like, were you going to talk to me about Jesus or just hand me this brochure? He's like, I'm just trying to do my job, buddy. I'm like, get off of this corner. You stink at this. You know, like, seriously, you can't invest a little time in a guy? What if I was really interested? It's a good thing I love Jesus already, but seriously. Yeah. You get that?
Yeah, with that pitch, he was going to be like, I was saved by that guy that gave me the Bible tract.
That's right. I care enough about you to hand you a piece of paper.
Yeah.
That's how much I love you. You know? Seems a bit far-reaching.
So how are we represented by the government? How is the church, American church, represented by the government?
Well, okay. Because they look at our culture as homogenous, even though we're not. We're a very diverse culture.
Yeah.
They think everyone is somehow related to whoever is president, and so any American you can talk to has direct access to the White House. That's kind of some of the mindset that goes on. So whatever U.S. foreign policy is in the Middle East, that's representative of everyone and the church. And so the two dominant factors of U.S. foreign policy are the wars that we go off and fight in the Middle East, and the other one is Israel, which most people in the American church have no idea what's going on in terms of Israel and Palestine and everything else there.
Yeah.
So the church has no clue what's going on, and, you know, we have a horrible reputation among Arab communities because of the stance that the United States takes on Palestine.
Hmm. So. Hold on, we're just going to let the silence sit.
I don't know what to do with that. I'm not smart enough.
Here's the question: Is there an action to be taken? Right? Like, are we responding correctly by no response? Or I mean, can we mast an effort? Would the effort be even beneficial? You know, or is it
what
something
would
that
the
you're
effort be?
Yeah? Are you just waiting for God to put it on your heart to start doing it? Or are you purposely not asking God if He wants you anything involved with it because you don't want to be involved?
Well, I think step one for the church has to be prayer. That's where we get our marching orders. That's where God comes to us and says, hey, I need these people. They need your help. Go get involved. And it's through prayer that churches get together and they adopt people groups and that they come up with missions and say, hey, let's actually go out and do something good. Syria, I don't know how to get into Syria. I mean, I've been in and out of the Middle East I don't know how many different times. I've flown all around Syria, not in Syria, but I don't know how to get into it, and especially not with the civil war going on.
Right.
But what I do know is there's a good 2 million people on the borders between Syria and Lebanon and Jordan. Right now, the fourth largest city in Jordan is a refugee camp, 14 months old. There's over 500,000 people there. They have no basic infrastructure. They have no health care. I mean, you know, as a church, let's say you've got maybe a couple of doctors or some people who can go over and administer antibiotics, go over to a refugee camp like that, set up, you know, just help out the people there and get ready for the time when peace does return to Syria and then jump into Syria.
Yeah.
Now what kind of a church and what kind of reputation are we actually building at that point? So, I mean, I think the action steps will come, but start with prayer. Get involved in prayer. Get an idea of what the needs are. I mean, this was just me researching online for the past hour, looking at what's going on in Syria and realizing, okay, healthcare in those refugee camps is a huge deal. Well, a church that might have a couple of healthcare professionals. And it's not like, you know, healthcare professionals are real eager to continue to their jobs in this country.
Right.
So,
yeah, it's true. It's not looking real promising.
Nothing going on. Why not try another option then?
Yeah. You know, I've often heard that when fellow believers are under the intense persecution like you read about, Mike, that the best way to pray for them is not to pray that they are that they don't have persecution, but that they're strong through it.
Yeah.
I mean, so I have this conflicted prayer. I probably pray at least once a week for this situation, because I read things and it just cuts my heart. Like, what can I do? Mm-hmm. And so I have this odd prayer where I'm praying, okay, God, protect him. Well, at least go keep him strong. It's like, that temptation is to God protect him from getting persecuted. But that's also what strengthens the church. You look at the New Testament, the church always grows in persecution.
Right.
I mean, always. It's like when we're lazy that we don't grow. Mm-hmm. It's when we're persecuted that the gospel spreads. So it's this really odd prayer I have. I'm jumping all over the place, kind of like my conversation right now. I'm like, God, protect him. No, what I mean is really, how do you pray for them?
Well, first off, they're the church. They've already been exposed to the gospel. The Holy Spirit's living in them. I mean, if death comes to them, it's a victory.
Right, right.
I mean, in as much as it's a tragedy, it's also a victory, because that's who we are. That's what God does, is he does that sort of thing. It's their neighbors is what's really the concern on my mind. And I imagine for those who are really, truly following Jesus, it's the concern on their mind as well. True, the persecution's going on towards them, but it's their neighbors that they're really concerned for. And these are also the people who can be kind of that boots on the ground logistical support for a church that really wants to get involved. So if you want to start sending people over and getting involved, then you start contacting the Christians who are on the ground in Lebanon and Jordan and whatnot, and say, hey, we're trying to help out with these refugees. I mean, their governments are asking for help as well. So you can go in and partner with Muslim governments to go out and help out Muslims who are dying because they just can't get the health care they need.
So like our local church here could do something where we would like ship supplies type of thing?
Oh, I'd send people, but...
Okay.
You could certainly send supplies as well, yeah.
I say, because you don't know where that's going to go, right? You can't.
Actually, yeah. I have people I'd be willing to ship pretty soon.
we have a list.
Yeah.
For a while.
But, I mean, I wouldn't just want to send supplies, because you have no idea what's going to end up happening with that.
Right.
But you really want someone with eyes who's going to get there and take a look and see what's going on and really kind of take ownership of the project. And for something like that, you would want someone who has a healthcare background and who maybe an RN or someone, or a doctor, or someone who maybe they've just retired from the healthcare profession, whatever. But someone who can actually kind of get there and get involved.
Well, here's the thing. Like, Jesus builds people for that, right? Like, when he says, I knew you, I created you, right? You're a creation of God. He builds people to fill roles, and he builds people to do his work, because he likes to see his work done through his people. And so, it's not like this person doesn't exist. It's not like there's not a guy or a gal who loves Jesus that won't fit this bill. You know, it's just being willing to do it, and being willing to not take it off the table. Like, I'm pretty sure that's not God's call for me, you know. But on the other hand, I think that's a lot of people's biggest fear, is they're like, I don't want to be sent to the Middle East. Don't send me over there. I don't want to do it. I don't want to be a missionary, you know. Well, here's the thing. God usually gives you the heart for the things that he wants you to do, right? And so he's generally not – of course, now hold on. He picked Philip up and threw him across the way. I might be losing my point slightly. But still, like, he puts you where he wants you to be. He gives you a heart for being there. And, I would back off your biggest fear as being that God's going to force you to go somewhere you don't want to be. Now, you're going to be in situations that might be a little anxiety-ridden and might be, a strengthening of your faith to get through. But that certainly doesn't mean that he doesn't want you there. And actually, I feel like we might we might be putting a little bit more thought in this. I feel like it's something that I've been skipping by. Maybe it's just because I'm getting advanced in age and not so self-concerned as maybe I once was. But, I feel like there's a heart in it. And, if we really are Christ's church, then they're us. You know, it's not like the border or the water makes any difference. You know, it's all the same. So anyway, I just thought it was interesting and there's just a, there's a lot going on, and there's a to take in the world, and we have a big God, so I mean, he can cover a lot of ground, And so I don't know. I just thought maybe it would just be an interesting time to have a look at it, look at the perspective, and see what we're, you know, that we might be missing with our, you know, with our Java Joes on the way to church on Sunday. You know, just something to think about. Yeah. So you got any passing stuff on the way out of that?
Just, you know, the initial question was what about Christians who are actually being targeted? And I know in Pakistan, and I know that in Kenya, they specifically were targeted. And for that, just pray for encouragement. I mean, those are some very extreme moments that those people are living through. And just, you know, pray for the presence of the Holy Spirit. I mean, it's amazing to see believers go through something like that and have the kind of peace that only the Holy Spirit can offer during those times. It's unworldly. And it's something that people take notice of, and it's a great testimony to the Holy Spirit. So just pray for that they can be encouraged because it's increasing. I mean, it has increased this century. There have been more Christians killed because of their faith this century than in every century prior to this. So, you know, it will increase, but it's something that God will use for His glory.
I like that phrase. It's unworldly. I like that. Yeah. I'd like to be unworldly.
Yeah, I kind of caught that too. I was like,
You know what? It is unworldly. This show's been called that, but not in a positive way. you're listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org, broadcasting every Monday night from 10 to 11 on livefromthepath.org, and also on KTIA 99.3 on the legitimate radio. And so you can catch that show Saturday nights at 7, and we'd love to have you there. If you want more bonus content, it's all found on the website. It's found on the podcast. We do about, I think we do a solid hour for KTIA, and then they're like, look, your money's no good here anymore. You fellas need to go. But we just keep on talking on the internet because it's free, and there's really no filter. People just let you do whatever you want on the internet, good, bad, or indifferent. And so that's what we got going. We're gonna hit this article on the millennials. It's always a touchy subject for me. Sometimes I get really interested. I'm like, why are people leaving the church? I got kind of involved in the youth group, and I'm like, hey, young people, what's wrong with you? You know, what's happening? And like, only to realize that I only left the church because I didn't like being bossed around, and I thought God didn't know what was best for me. And so, there's a lot of people that think that, but this dude's taking a stab on it. Like I said, I took a quick run through it. I don't believe he's a Jesus man, but I think we'll be able to vet that out as we go along. Yeah, yeah. So, it says, why are millennials leaving the church? Try atheism. Articles and books about why millennials are leaving Christianity often focus on what churches are doing wrong. They're anti-gay, anti-women, anti-science, anti-sex education, and anti-doubt, to name a few of the most common criticisms. Most of those are not true, if not all of them. None of those are true, really. I don't disagree with those critiques, but there's another side to the story. While Christians have played sloppy defense, secular Americans have been showing off some impressive offense, giving young Christians plenty of reasons to lose faith in organized religion. For instance, atheists dominate the internet. I got a comment. We're going to wait on that. Rallying to thriving websites and online communities in lieu of physical meeting spaces. Even a writer for the evangelical magazine Relevant admitted that while Christianity enjoys a robust online presence, the edge still seems to belong to its unbelievers. Atheists outnumber Christians on popular discussions forums like Reddit, where the subscribers to the atheism section number more than 2 million. The Christianity section is not even 5% of that. The internet-based foundation Beyond Belief, which encourages atheists to donate to charitable organizations, just celebrated raising $1 million for worthwhile causes. Moreover, blogs and websites espousing non-religious viewpoints and criticizing Christianity draw tons of internet traffic these days. Every Christian apologist argument, it seems, there's an equal and opposite rebuttal to be found online. Christians can no longer hide in a bubble, shelter from opposing perspectives, and church leaders can't protect young people from finding information that contradicts traditional belief. There's an open comment thread to be found on Christian's YouTube video or opinion piece online. There's inevitably going to be a pushback from atheists. We've experienced that front hand, and yeah, it's kind of rough. Among other things, this proves that the anti-atheist stereotypes aren't accurate, and just as important that atheists aren't alone in their communities. There's the Richard Dawkins Foundation, with its Scarlet A badges. There are atheists encouraging billboards in 33 states. There's a 1-800 hotline for people recovering from religion. But more than anything else, atheism's best advertisements may be the words of Christian leaders themselves. When Pastor Mark Driscoll belittles women, Rick Warren argues against same-sex rights, or Rob Bell equivocates on the concept of hell, we amplify those messages for them, and it helps us make our point. It goes without saying that the pairing of Pat Robertson and YouTube has been great for atheists. Bummer. Pastors are no longer the final authority on the truth, and millennials know it. Blah, 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 blah. Here it finally starts to rail up here. To believe in Jesus means believing that he was born of a virgin, rose from the dead, and performed a number of miracles. There's no proof of any of that ever happened, and atheists place those stories in the same box as the young earth creationism and Noah's great flood. To be sure, if Christians followed the positive ideas Jesus had, we'd all be better off, but it's very hard to separate the myth from the reality. In short, there are many reasons the percentage of millennials who say they've never doubted God's existence is at a record low, and nearly a quarter of adults under 30 no longer affiliate with a faith. The church has pushed young people away, yes, but there are also forces actively pulling them in the other direction. It appears that atheists and Christians are finally working together on the same task, getting millennials to leave the church.
Wow.
Whiz bang, says the atheist man. We got all kinds of problems. One, the message itself, anti-gay, anti-women, anti-science, anti-sex education, and anti-doubt, to name a few. Okay, go ahead. Somebody else open it up.
That guy sounds like the same dude who wrote the 50... What was that website?
The 50 proofs that God is imaginary?
It's just this circular thing that I don't agree with them, so therefore, of course everybody's leaving because they're not agreeing with me. So, and by the way, we're all on the internet. Okay. I'm never going to church again because there's atheists on the internet and they gave $1 million. I mean, that's...
Actually, Dan, well put.
That's just silly. I wonder what the average church offering is in the middle, you know, per week.
I don't mean
the average church. I mean altogether, total. Christians are given tons of money to help people feed the poor, clothe the naked.
They're also keeping a lot of the money.
They're doing silly things with it, too. I'm not going to deny that. Okay. But there's a lot of good things being done by the generous believers. Because that's happening doesn't draw them to church, just like because atheists are given to some whatever good cause is doesn't make them leave the church. I mean, it's not connected.
Why are they leaving the church, Dan?
Well, some of the churches have become irrelevant, and they should be left, to be honest. I don't know what he's defining a church. There's a lot of churches that need to be left.
Well, I would just assume he's defining churches that claim to be churches. I don't think that he's dissecting it, maybe to the point that we dissect it.
You're probably right.
But does he have a point? The young adults, the millennials, are leaving the church not only because of the message, but because of the environment. Is there some truth in that?
The environment of the church being unwelcoming to millennials?
Do you mean just they stopped coming to the building?
Yeah, they stopped being an active part of the church. Maybe they weren't an active part of the church to begin with. I don't know. But, like, I mean, that's true across the board. I mean, numbers for people ages 18 to 30 they're not good. They're never...
I don't think it's ever been good. I mean, it's a tough demographic to reach no matter what. You know, there's a point where if you grow up in a church, then you reach an age where you finally get to feel like you're making a choice. And it's oftentimes choosing to not go to church. And you spend a decade or so wiling in your own mistakes and get to be about 30 and like, this really isn't working.
Is that the formula?
I've seen it played out time and again. I mean, I'm not saying that's what happened to me. I'm not saying that it's okay. But I know that I'm not alone. I know that I've seen people fall away from the church, and I, you know, pray for them, hope that they come back. But it's unfortunate, you know. I mean, it's hard because as a parent, maybe you try and instill your faith into the child instead of having them have a relationship with God, then you want them to have your relationship with God. And then they feel like God is a grandpa instead of a father. I don't know. I mean, you have to come to a point where you make the decision for yourself. And if you, you know...
I mean, a lot of his points are that like Christians can no longer hide in a bubble, shelter from opposing perspectives, and church leaders can't protect young people from finding information that contradicts traditional beliefs. Like, are we skipping a lot of the apologetics? Are we skipping a lot of the brass tacks that, like, I mean, look at the Gospel of Luke, right? Like, that's groundbreaking apologetics works for a man, right? Like, he basically said, here's the hope and the faith that you've been given, and here's a systematic, theological, point-by-point, fact-based accounting of what went down. Are we missing that for the, you know, give me the Holy Spirit with no basis?
I think a lot of like youth group driven ministries, and this is I'm painting with a broad stroke here, but a lot of them are so focused on like getting a big number that they, you know, maybe don't add a lot of substance to what they're doing. So, you know, we're having a party night and you know, we got the fog machine out and I don't know how many churches are legitimately really training, making disciples with the youth. It's almost like, well, we do that with adults, but youth we entertain and give them ice cream and we play games.
We expect them to have a short attention span. We expect them to not grasp the deeper context of things.
So we've given them nothing to stay connected to. It's just like, well, here's this sponge,
you give them you feed them milk over and over, and then
they eventually hate milk.
Right.
But rather than challenging them and teaching them and training them. And
so the man has a point. What do you think, Dave?
Well, I think churches are kind of just giving up the one thing that the church has, and that's the gospel, and instead is trying to replace it with entertainment in general.
That's what this show is, Dave. Take it easy.
I know. But it's not like we're going to, as a church, we're not going to compete with Hollywood for entertainment.
Right. So, like an arrow to the soul. Keep talking.
It's like, come on, seriously, they've been at it for a lot longer. What we have that, essentially our special sauce, if you look at it as a business model, the reason why a customer would come to us is the one thing that we can offer that no one else can outside the world, and that's the gospel. That we can offer a right relationship with God. And, you know, that's something that we can offer. And the less of that we offer in the church, the more we're replacing that space with entertainment and, you know, we're
missing
that.
And pamphlets.
Yeah, pamphlets.
Everybody hates pamphlets.
Here's a pamphlet.
Full color pamphlets.
I don't need a pamphlet.
Here's the thing.
You can go to Wikipedia.
Dan, you're going to think twice about ever printing up a pamphlet again.
You're right. My pamphlets encourage conversation. It will mean nothing if they give it to him.
Hey, page one, stop reading this pamphlet. Why don't you talk to a guy? Here's the thing. One of the things he was talking about was like the atheists have an awesome internet presence. That's impressive. Hopefully the Christians are busy talking to some other guy. You know, like, hopefully they're not sitting on the internet by themselves in the middle of a blog.
Yeah, it depends on what you're searching, because everything I search is just filled with all kinds of sometimes ridiculous Christian stuff. You know, because I wish some of our Christian people would stay off the internet because they just make us look silly. You know, like if Pat Robertson maybe would stay off the YouTube, that'd probably be good. But they're there. They are there as well.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got this. You're listening to Life from the Path on LifeFromThePath.org. We're talking about why millennials are leaving the church. I am not a millennial. I'm an old man. I go to church because God told me I had to, because he had enough of my philandering ways. And said, that's enough, Mike. I want you to come back. And I said, okay. Is atheist man right? Is that the only way that it's done? We get to be 18. We bail on it. We live life and we're like, man, I feel like there was something better offered to me. And then we stroll back in. I had this conversation with some fellas in our youth group, and I think I flat out asked them. I said, look, when did you plan on really following God? You know, like, after you got married, or after you had kids, or what were you thinking? And they were honest, and they're like, yeah, maybe after I had kids. None of them were like, I'm going to Syria, or I'm ready to kick this in the caboose and get started. They're like, well, I feel like after I take on some responsibility, then maybe I should go to church and realize the right way to live, right? And it seems like it all feeds into a phony condition of adolescence that's not real. You know, like there's a place in time between, say, 16 and 26 where it's your free years to waste like a fool, so you have something to repent of when you finally come back to Jesus, right? And, like, we lose so much time in that 10-year span, and so much work that can be done, and so much spreading of the gospel just because of that 10-year span, right? Like, what happens after you get married? Well, one, now your time's kind of divided. And the Bible supports that, and they says, love your wife like Christ loved the church. That's going to take time. You can't just do a flyby pamphlet on your marriage. You're going to have to devote the time. You start having kids, now it's your time. Now it's your turn to start leading your family and growing them in the Spirit. You're basically in charge of discipling the people in your household. That's going to take time, right? I had a lot more time to witness and invest in relationships before I got married and before I had kids. Is that a good or a bad thing, right? I'm not saying it either way. I wouldn't trade the discipleship opportunity that I have with my wife and kids for anything, right? It's a glorious responsibility. But what I bemoan is the fact that I wasted 10 years to get to it, right? Like, I could have talked to a million people, and I could have gone to a lot of places, and they could have said, look, I'll meet you at 12:30 at night over at the Come and Go, and I'd have said, fine, I'll be there because I don't have anywhere else to be, you know? Like, what else am I going to do with myself? And, like, it's not like that's every opportunity, but it's got to be some, right?
You know? Maybe we just haven't engaged that generation, you know? When we went to – we took a group down to Oklahoma after the tornadoes hit this past summer and to do some help, you know, helping people literally – take their house piece by piece to the curb. And some of the people who came were teenagers. And my first thought was, oh, man, this is just going to be bad. You know, this isn't like youth group. You know, we're not having like a party. You know, this is like really work. They outworked all the – everybody.
The old people.
Yeah, I was the old guy. But I mean, they just outworked everybody. They were into it. I had to tell them to stop and take breaks once in a while or they wouldn't. I mean, they were just working. And I think maybe the church, we need to give them some tangible tasks like that to put you know, some skin on Jesus and say, here, this is you being Jesus to these people. You don't even know who they are, but their home's in rubble right now. And it helps them process it maybe a little more than just, well, let's have a flannel graph little Bible study tonight. You know, rather than let's do something.
Yeah, I feel like I could do a flannel graph drive. And really, I could make something cool. You know, like some of those old, like, have you ever seen the Gremlins? Remember the Gremlins 2?
Oh, yeah.
Where they took
oh,
over
yeah.
the office building? And they had a bunch of old school TVs all placed together, and I always thought, one day I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to make a giant, you know, 15 TVs, TV out of this thing. I feel like I could do the same thing with flannel graphs. We don't use them much anymore, and I could make one heck of a landscape out of them. You know, almost on a whole wall if I wanted to.
Yeah.
You're listening to Life from the Path on lifefromthepath.org. Listen, if you're between the ages of 18 and 30, you should go back to church.
Amen.
I don't know that I have, I've talked to, here's the deal. I've done some, man, I've had a rough Jesus day. I've had a lot of talks about a lot of people about Jesus today. And, some of them were heartbreaking when they got over because they weren't interested. And it gave me something to pray for, which was great. But like, it was heartbreaking because they were not interested in listening to the gospel. And they basically just said, I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm like, dang it. Okay, that hurts. But, you know, I'm sad. And then I had a couple conversations where they were open to it, and they wanted to talk about Jesus and ask for some prayer, and everything was awesome. And, you know, I feel like you gotta go through both, right? And sometimes when you get involved in a church family, you take the easy road of being like, okay, what's everybody's prayer request? That's very nice of you. I mean, don't get me wrong. The power of prayer is pretty amazing, right? But like, if that's as far as your outreach ministry goes, that's terrible. Like, that just stinks. They know Jesus, right? Pray for them because you love them, and then move on. Talk to somebody that doesn't know Jesus, and you know, put yourself in some awkward positions. And I promise you, it's very awkward. It's very awkward, and it's going to make you sad, and you're going to feel burdened with it. And sometimes that's what the shape of the cross is that you carry daily. It's a emotional burden for the people that aren't interested. And that's okay. That's some of the things that Christ has set out for you. You know, not everybody's going to be Syria. And I pray for their families, and he's right. The first place we go is prayer for strength in what they're doing. And I'm sure it's probably one of the most amazing things to see is someone dying peacefully for the name of Christ, right? But, like, that's not going to be everybody. It's not going to be everybody you know. Some of that is dealing with some emotional burden and carrying that cross, you know, to Jesus with prayer requests for people that aren't interested in him. And you know, I don't know, I just ask you to change your perspective a little bit, that the 18 to 30-year-old range is not one that we just go, well, everybody jumps off to rebellion for a while and we have a hard time getting them back. Because, frankly, that's lame. It's cowardly, and I think we can do better than that. And I think if we were willing to invest in some relationships, very much like we were willing to invest in some of the other, you know, Christian goings-on throughout the world, I don't know, I feel like the hands and feet get a little bit bigger. And that's all. So it's just something to think about. You're listening to Life from the Path on lifefromthepath.org. The chat has dared me to find 15 flannel graphs, and I feel like I'm going to start an internet campaign just to show the atheists what.
I used to have a big box of them. I was so proud of that thing. I never used them. I just thought I should have it.
Yeah, actually, it would be weird to put the flannel graphs in a box and then write on it with a Sharpie, because the flannel graph was used to announce things to people. And Paul was always tall, taller than other people, and it was oddly done. Did anybody say, you ever see the flannel graph Paul? Like, he was always like...
Yeah, he was the shortest one in the box.
Yeah. I don't know. I like flannel graphs. We're listening to Life from the Path. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to move on to some Dear Life from the Path. We've got some advice to take care of. Can we swing that microphone over to Tessa? Tessa's going to give us some lady type of advice on what's happening. And so here we go. The first one is... Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot to tell you about our sponsors. Here's the deal. We're not good enough to be on legitimate radio without sponsors. People pay for us to do things, right? And there's a couple people that are currently holding down that bill. One is Bob Eisenlauer with the Eisenlauer team. He's a real estate man, and frankly, he's the best in the business as far as I'm concerned. Copyright Mike Foost. Bob Eisenlauer is fantastic. But I used him to sell my house. He's a great guy. He's going to be on the show in the next couple weeks. I'm just going to keep saying that until he eventually shows up. I've been saying that for 3 weeks now. He eventually will come on the show.
I think it'll work.
Yeah. But he's a solid Jesus man. I love getting to know him, and he's helped keeping us on the air out at KTIA. Same thing with the Westfield Veterinary Clinic in Johnson, Iowa. I use those guys for all my pet needs. And so it is somewhat lame to go into all the businesses that you use and then say, hey, would you like to sponsor the radio show? But frankly, that's the advertising suave that I'm currently equipped with. And so that's what happened. And so they were generous, and they do a great job with all our animals. And that's the Westfield Veterinary Hospital in Johnson. You can find them at westfieldvet.com. So here we go. Dear Live from the Path, I was divorced 14 years ago. Afterward, my ex, Tom, hid from me because he was afraid I'd have him arrested for not paying child support. Our son is a Marine, and the Red Cross notified him that his father was dying in a hospital on the East Coast. My ex's aunt had contacted them to notify my son as next of kin. Tom had remarried, divorced again, and had a girlfriend. He died a few days later. Nobody is willing to pay for his cremation. I asked his sister and aunt if we could split the bill three ways, even though I realize I'm not obligated. They refused, even after being told the remains would be deemed unclaimed. The county would dispose of him as an indigent drifter. Their excuse was they hadn't heard from him in several years. I told them they were preaching to the choir since I was the one he hid from. I do not resent my ex because I realize his death was as unpredictable as his life, but I do feel bitterly taken advantage of. When I accused his relatives of false concern, they got angry at me. How can I demonstrate honor to my son by dishonoring his father that way? What do you think, fellas? That's weird. There's weird stuff going on here. Some kind of vagrant dad fathered a boy, hid to avoid child support, went on some kind of unknown vagrant lifestyle for 20, 30 years. Finally, his son figures out that he's not going to make it. And then the ex-wife from 30 years ago is stuck with the cremation bill.
Yeah, I don't think she's responsible for that. I mean, the county should take care of that. I've done funerals where the county just takes care of it because there's no one to pay the bill.
Well, can't they say, hey, but there is a guy, it's you because you're standing here. I feel like there's enough evidence to convict you that you knew the man.
Was he actually indigent? I mean, was he homeless?
Is that a legal term, indigent?
I think so.
I mean, how do you qualify as that? Do you have to prove your indigency? Feel like that'd be hard to do.
This is my box.
Yeah, like, I don't...
You can't find a W-2 for me for the last 20 years. I mean, if he's hiding from child support, then he's not working a legitimate job. If he's working, he's working under the table for cash.
Right.
And, I mean, you have to actively work to get off the grid. So, I mean, and obviously his ex-wife isn't the only person he was dodging. So,
no,
I do agree that I don't think she should be responsible. She's ponying up just so that her son feels like she's honoring her.
Her son's the Marine, right?
His dad.
Yeah.
So you know, I guess the son can do it.
Here's the deal. Is this really a deal? I mean, is this really a concern? You know, like, I mean, if the son was like, Mom, I'd like you to cover this. I feel like maybe you could say, okay, son, if that would help. But, like, is it really something to feel guilty about?
It sounds like she's wanting to do it so that she can be like, well, I took care of your dad. You know, I mean, yeah. It doesn't sound like the son is doing that.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. What are your?
I mean, funerals aren't cheap. You know, it's not like I'll just go ahead and I mean, all the you know, just all the expenses and costs involved. It's just crazy.
What is the actual question? What is the advice that she's?
I think she was basically asking.
Should she be responsible?
Yeah. Like, is it the right thing? It says, I do not resent my ex. Blah blah blah. How can I demonstrate honor to my son by dishonoring his father that way? What do you think, Dave?
I'm not sure that she's involved. I mean, once they became exes, their lives together were over. The responsibility would actually be her son's, not hers.
Exactly.
But as a mother, she could get involved and help him shoulder that responsibility. But as an ex, she doesn't. There's no responsibility she has. I usually take the opinion of let everyone else in the equation try and do the right thing, and if no one else wants to, then I'll make sure it gets done. But
I like that. The cleanup man, the janitor.
Yeah, a people janitor. If no one else wants to do the right thing, then I'll do it.
Right.
But otherwise, I want to give someone else first crack at doing the right thing. And it seems kind of like that's what's going on. The other issue is, like Dan said, it's expensive. And they probably have financial limits. So, she's got to kind of weigh that one. And maybe she and her son might have the cash to either pay for part of it or something like that. But I think it's accurate to say that he was, whatever, vagrant or something.
Indigent,
yeah. And leave it to the county. I mean, it's accurate at least. So I could see that. But I think that the son probably, and her as well, might just look at this is kind of a final way of cleaning up and saying, you know, we hold no ill will against you type of a thing.
Yeah, it sounds like they do.
It's like a parting gift.
They do hold some ill will against him.
Well, if they do, then...
Like, it's displacing honor to a man that was deserves none. Mm-hmm. You know, which kind of sounds like the...
He's acted dishonorably, kind of across the board.
Agreed.
Hid from his own son.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah. I'm not saying that's a good reason to snuff the guy. Tessa, what do you think?
I really don't think it's the ex's obligation to figure that out. I mean, that is expensive. That's a whole other burden that it's not really hers to carry out.
Yeah, I think I'm getting the general feeling is like, look, you're trying to do the right thing. You're trying to take responsibility for something that's not your responsibility. So pretty much, I mean, here's the two sides of the coin, right? If you're going to do it, just be quiet and do it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If you're not going to do it, just be quiet and not do it, you know?
Yeah.
But like,
yeah.
It seems odd to torture yourself in the troubled waters of, you know what I'm saying? Just do it or don't do it. You're not really obligated. But
if you're like loaded and it's not going to affect you financially, just do it. I mean,
yeah.
But if it's going to really put a crunch on you, I wouldn't.
I feel like she's college educated because I don't use the word indigent. And I'm known in circles to be very intelligent. So here's the secular advice. It says, you are not the next of kin. Your son is. Ask him what he thinks what would be the appropriate way to handle his deadbeat dad's remains. You made the effort to have the family pay for the burial.
Kick him when he's down.
And that should show your son that you tried to honor his father. I don't know how long it has been since your ex passed, but this is a case where the body could have been donated to a medical school. There's nothing dishonorable about that.
Ah, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, I don't... That seems...
A little cadabra action?
Cadabra?
Cadaver,
Dan.
Same thing, whatever. Do I look like a medical student?
Cadabra is half of a magical dude.
Hey.
Abra?
I read the Bible. I don't do the medical journals.
Fair enough. Score 1 for the atheist, 0 for the Jesus people.
We're on the internet.
Uneducated, whatever. I could get my lawnmower to church in 27 minutes. Here we go, dear life from the past. Oh, boy. A friend who lives out of town asked me if she can stay with me for a few days. We often host each other. However, she has also mentioned that she has a bed bug infestation.
Oh.
I could take precautions, but some friends have said it was nervy of her to even ask because it put me in an awkward position. I honestly would prefer she not come, but I feel guilty. Any advice?
Hey, I got this motel down the road. I'll pay for it.
So she's staying at a house that has bed bugs.
She's coming from a house that has bed bugs.
I just be honest. That's a big deal. I don't really want to have bed bugs. I understand you have bed bugs. I love you enough to buy you a motel.
I'm actually interested on how that conversation came about. Like, hey, can I come stay at your place because I have bed bugs?
Yeah, how does everybody seem to know about the bed bugs?
Yeah, no.
You know, as a kid, I thought bed bugs were like a fake thing. Like, my dad was like,
don't let the bed bugs bite.
If they do, bite them back. That was always his advice.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, bed bugs are this imaginary thing. I never heard anything that contradicted that until... like 6 or 7 years ago.
When it became a thing.
And then I was like, bed bugs are a real thing?
It's in the news now.
Yeah, so I'm like, are they getting much worse? And then people are talking about them? Is it like, you know, like, I don't... I think it's baffling.
I don't know what it is. Pretty posh motels, even hotels are having problems with them these days.
Yeah, I stayed in a hotel one time for work, and I came back from a class, and I get to the hotel, and there's a... inconspicuous white truck with a big old tube coming out of it, right? And the mattress is up against the window. And I found the guy because he was on my floor, and I said, hey, dude, what's going on here? He goes, I'm sorry, I can't tell you. I said, if you were that good at being covert, you would not be driving a giant white truck with a tube out of it with the mattress flipped over. It's bugs, isn't it? No, I can't really tell you. I said, well, it ain't lions. I'm going to go talk to the front desk. He's like, yeah, it's bugs. No kidding, you know? Like, seriously. But wow. Here's the deal. Like, I don't know how long you've been friends, but I mean, if we're any kind of friends at all, and you're like, hey, I'm gonna come over and stay at your place, I have the bed bugs. I would say, I have a great tent for you to sleep in, or I will go halvesies with you at the Best Western.
That's kind of like saying, hey, I got lice. Can I use all your kids' combs? I need to brush my hair. I mean, you know, no,
and
really,
the bed
you can't.
Bugs, I mean, they come with you, or they're not in your bed. They travel. Person?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
if they come
get
and sleep
you
in your bed, then you have bed bugs now, too?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's how it spreads.
Okay.
That's how the motels get them.
Dan, you don't know anything about that.
Hey,
I
know that, and abracadabra.
Nice. Abracadabra, yes.
Secular's advice is, yes, tell your friend you would love to see her, but in light of her revelation, you think it would be better if she stays in a hotel during this visit. And unless you are absolutely sure that her home and clothing are insect-free, entertain her away from your dwelling. Bedbugs can cling to everything. Suitcases, clothing, you name it. Hostess, protect thyself. You know, that would be... Here's the thing, like... I have some really good friends, and I can't imagine this. I would play this up like, hey, let's go out to dinner tonight. Like, keep up a charade. I'd be like, seriously, dude, you have bed bugs. You're not coming
right.
in here.
If you're that worried about hurting their feelings, you're not actually that good of friends with
yeah,
them.
Yeah.
Especially you.
Yeah.
I mean,
I want you to strip down to your cadabra,
right.
And then I'm going to give you some clothes to wear, and then you can come in here. Other than that, you are not coming in this house with them bugs. You know?
I mean, one of those disinfecting fan floor things. Yeah.
Make
you walk into that, too.
If they were that easy to get rid of, she wouldn't still have them. You know, I mean, so she's...
You would think.
You know, yeah. So it's like, we want to keep them away from the house.
You're listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org. We've got time for one more. It's got to be kind of speedy. We're coming up on the KTI bump. And so let's try to roll through this real quick here. It says, Dear Live from the Path, I've been in an on-again, off-again, long-distance relationship with a guy for a year and a half. This smells like trouble. I have broken up with him and taken it back 6 times. Wow. It's always for the same reason. We are not compatible as a romantic couple. I have explained that we would be better off as friends, but when I try to leave, he cries and begs me not to go. I'm afraid he could be suicidal based on past reactions. I love him as a friend, and I want him to be with someone who can love him the way he wants to be loved. How do I let him down easy, if there even is such a thing? I'm afraid I might ruin his life. I guess my question is, when you know in your gut that things won't work out, when is it okay to throw in the towel?
You are not ready for children.
Yeah.
I mean, just put it mildly. If someone cries and that's your trigger, you are not ready to raise kids.
That ain't no doubt. You know what the answer is? Yesterday. That's when it's a good time to do it.
Yeah.
6 times. Seriously. here's the deal. Most couples that I know, they've had like one weird blow up somewhere in the middle. And then like that was about it. You know, and then that's it. They're done. But 6 times?
It's a bit much.
Seriously, dude, crying and begging, you know, like, I wouldn't want to hang around with you either. I'm going to trust you with the rest of my life. This is the way you're going
to
react?
It's not going to get better.
No.
She needs to just cut it off.
And
cut it. I mean,
sometimes if it doesn't end badly, it doesn't end. I mean, I'm not saying be malicious, but, you know, I mean, if you try to leave it open-ended, like, I want to be his friend, that's not going to work. There is no, you know, I had somebody that I dated off and on again for 6 times probably.
Yeah.
And there was a span of like 6 months where we didn't even talk to each other.
Did you cry when you broke up?
No.
Could this be?
Yes, she was writing that about me. Yes, it's terrible. But, you know, it like the thing that we'd get back together and then it's like a week in and it's the same problems, exact same problems as, you know, it's like no time had passed.
Yeah.
We were mutually incompatible. So we just made each other crazy.
What are you
and
holding?
Miserable.
I don't understand this perspective. What are you holding on to? The hope that he might be somebody completely different? You know what you could do? Date a guy that's completely different.
Right.
You know, like, I don't know what you think is going to happen. There's going to be some kind of etch-a-sketch shake on the man, and he's going to stop being some kind of weird non-committal crybaby. I feel like it's not going to happen.
She's got to cut her off.
Yeah, it's time. I don't know. That might be kind of harsh. Here's the deal, though. Like, you hear this a lot. People are like, hey, I'm going to break up. Well, I'm going to hurt myself. Oh, I guess we'll stay together. Yeah, that's the basis for a strong, happy marriage.
Yeah, right.
You know, some kind of symbiotic relationship where, you know, it's basically blackmail for the next 50 years.
See, I'm kind of heartless. I'd be like, well, can you make sure and put me in the will first? Because, you know.
Do you have someone to cremate you? Because
you
I don't want to be.
Codependent.
Please don't be indigent. That's terrible.
Can you wait till I'm out the door before you hurt yourself? Because I don't want to hear it.
That is not Jesus.
Yeah.
Here we go. Here is the advice from Secular. After six breakups, your long-distance romance is well past its expiration date. When there is a lack of chemistry between a couple, it's no one's fault and is usually a deal-breaker. The problem with letting someone down the way that you're trying to is that it prolongs the pain, like removing a sliver halfway, then jamming it back in because the person is wincing.
Whoa.
Ow.
Well, that seemed uncharacteristically not needed. The threats of suicide if a romance is unsuccessful are attempts to control the partner who wants to leave through guilt. Mm-hmm. The time to throw in that towel is right now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Five breakups ago, actually.
that ain't no doubt. you're listening to Live from the Path at livefromthepath.org. You know, here's the deal. We've really enjoyed the time, but if you're on KTIA, that train is slowing down, and the trap door is about to fall out. And you, sir, will be moving yourself to a happy location that is not on Live from the Path. The podcast is going to keep on rolling. We got a couple more Dear Live from the Past to go. I'm currently getting ready to play a tune on the way out, but it's a free service, and they're playing a commercial. And so I'm trying to skip by it. And so if you could just hold on for the low-rent part of the show to move by, I will... No, it's not done yet. I will wait till the tune is ready, and we will go ahead and kick you on out of here. If you want to check on more information about Life from the Path, please visit lifefromthepath.org. And you know what? We might just have to sing you on out of here.
What's a good song? Let's see.
No, I'm not. Do Deuteronomy.
Oh, yeah. Okay, now we're talking. Okay, so anyway, you listen to Life from the Path on lifefromthepath.org.
News calls.
Still advertisement. Be just a second. Nope, still waiting for it. Nope. You know what? Just listen to the advertisement. Be just a minute.
AMC.
There's stuff on AMC.
Don't worry. It's real bad out.
Now we're talking. Yeah! Here's the deal. Ben Foost is coming back into town. You can expect a higher rent show. Not a rent to own like I'm currently offering, but thank you for listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org. We will catch you next week. Okay, that was all. That was embarrassing.
That was awesome. That's a classic.
That was as awkward as that girl's third breakup with that guy.
Wow.
The issue is, when should I break up? Because it's going to happen.
Right, yeah.
Make
yeah.
sure you don't take him back after that.
Uh-huh. That is terrible. Okay, we're going
to... We should have advised her to go ahead and get bed bugs, and that'll just solve everything.
Yeah.
It looks like we got...
Give him bed bugs.
Yeah.
I got a couple bits of advice. Being searched out from a 13-year-old. Here we go. Tessa, this might be more up your alley. I don't know. It's coming from a 13-year-old lady. I don't know how to answer this. Here we go.
I'm an expert there.
It says, Dear Tessa.
Wow.
I'm 13 years old, and I recently enrolled in a new school. I have met two boys, Jake and Corey, and I have been crushing on both of them.
Boys are no good.
I really like Jake for everything, but I'm not sure he likes me back. I like Corey for his looks and popularity, and I'm positive he likes me because he said so.
Okay.
Hold on a minute. It's not over. Be quiet now. This is our demographic that's leaving the church. Ship it up. Here we go.
I don't know why we're laughing at their emotional trauma.
Question is, should I ask Jake to go with me first, and if he says no, rebound to Corey?
Wow.
I can't take this. Okay, seriously, to the panel, boys. What should she do? Hold on, let me give you a rundown real quick. Jake is—he seems like he's good for everything. Corey has looks and popularity, which I assume that Jake does not. He doesn't sound super popular.
She's 13.
She's 13.
Here's my advice: you're too young to date. Yeah. Wait till you're 16 at least.
I agree.
This is why people are leaving the church, Phil. she just gave you.
Nothing good will happen.
What about the looks and popularity, man? He sounds all right.
This is the first bit of advice that we've given that's going to deviate from what secular says. So I gotta agree. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. No good way. You don't need a guy to make you complete.
Hold on.
Exactly.
Now listen, fellas. She did not ask you whether she should date or not. She asked which one of these cool dudes she should date.
Neither.
Now, neither. Yeah.
No. Looks, man, or everything else is okay. Okay. Here's what we're going
to do. Looks are fleeting.
I mean. There's more substance with the first guy.
Yeah, but people will think less of you if you hang out with ugly people. Mm-hmm. My wife said the same thing happened to her.
I was always hopelessly awkward all the way through.
Yeah.
All the schools. So, you know, it doesn't get any better no matter what you do. So don't worry about it.
Okay, so the advice...
Popularity's for other people anyway.
Live from the Path pretty much says, look, no dating. Okay, what if I move this question to say she's 22?
Uh-huh.
Fresh out of school. Jake has good looks and popularity. Corey, Jake is good at everything, pretty much, but she's not sure if he likes him. And Corey has looks and popularity, and he definitely says that he's into her. She's crushing on the both of them.
She should pursue the first one.
Is it just an age thing you're saying, no dating?
Yeah.
She's only 13.
Based on what?
Dating's for marriage. You find a life partner.
So there's biblical marriages at 14, 15.
Not in America.
Yeah, back before they had the word teenager.
Yeah.
That's
maybe true.
Yep.
Uh-huh. That's very true.
Wow. I'm going to find an atheist website that says, well, give me the answer to my question.
Well, you're not going to like what they say.
But it's a well-designed website.
I have one question for her.
Sure.
Which of the two guys is going to actually cause her faith to grow? That's the one you choose.
Corey's got good looks and popularity. What if I said he loves Jesus too? Would you then make a choice? If she's 13 and says Corey has good looks, popularity, and he loves Jesus, he's a Jesus man, then would you okay the date?
You love Jesus, then you have the Holy Spirit and you have patience.
Now hold
on. So you will wait.
Dave just said he would give the date a thumbs up at 13 if Corey was a Jesus man. Would you? And you're still sticking to no dating, just due to the age only.
Yeah.
Yep, I'm with Dan.
I'm still saying avoid dating, but you can be friends with a guy.
Especially a good-looking Jesus man.
Yeah.
I like to hang out with good-looking Jesus dudes. You know what I'm saying? They're popular. Here's what Secular says. By the way, none of you guys are helping me out. Secular says,
you're welcome.
The school year has just started, and it's a little early to be asking someone to go with you. If you take your time, say, wait a month, Jake may find the courage to tell you he likes you, too. If he does not, tell Corey you're interested in him and see if he still feels the same way about you. Those are 50-50. And who knows, in another month, there might be a third man.
Wow.
She's off the babysitting list.
Weird.
Bummer. Okay, here we go. I got a couple more here. By the way, the chat says, drop them both. I'm available.
Nick's going after the 13-year-olds?
Dang it, pants. Yeah. Here we go. Dear Life in the Path, my brother thinks I eat too slow, and I think he eats too fast. He claims it's rude to eat slow and make others wait for you. I say eating slowly is healthy and is better than wolfing down your food to keep up with the people you're with. Who's right?
I have always been a fast eater. I was trained to be a fast eater because my brother is a fast eater. And whoever finished first got second. And it was always me or him. So my other brother, he just ate like a bird because he knew he couldn't beat either one of us.
Yeah.
And nobody else wanted to mess with it. So, but yeah, I mean, I used to work with a guy that he was very methodical, and it drove me crazy to go out to eat with him because he was like 20 bites on each side for every bite or something. He had some weird, like, artists are weird.
Sound like something wrong with him.
He had an OCD thing going on.
Right, yeah. So, you know.
That's not just a weird tick. Like, there's something wrong with that man.
There's many things wrong with him. Yeah. But, you know.
Okay.
I'm just saying, from my perspective, it was very frustrating. I've had people that were, you know, shocked to see me eat and, you know, like, oh, keep your hands away from his mouth. You don't know what's going in there. You know, I think it's personal preference, you know. I don't think that it's rude to eat slowly or quickly. I don't scarf something down because I don't taste it. I totally taste it. Yeah.
Maybe you could try eating at the right amount of speed. Maybe you don't have to...
Just like right in the middle.
You don't have to be a crazy man, and you don't have to be an old lady. Why don't you just eat a regular paced meal, you know?
I think it's like when you drive, you're supposed to go the pace of traffic.
Yeah.
You know? Sometimes. And so you eat at the pace of...
That seems like an awful lot of effort for me to look around the room.
Actually, I do probably eat slower than I used to.
Yeah.
And I found myself very OCD about stirring stuff now.
Right.
So that's what my wife makes fun of me, because I'm like...
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for that piece of information.
Well, no, I'm like, I got to do something. I'm not doing this, so I'm doing this. I'm doing fast eating in the bowl instead of always shoveling it into my mouth.
Right.
But, you know, I think everybody eats at the speed that's comfortable for them. So
right.
I think it's unfair to
make
a fast eater try to eat slow to make you comfortable. I don't try to make fast slow eaters eat fast, because I'm like, I'm ready to go.
Right. What do you think?
I'll just sit and watch him eat.
How do you feel about speed of eating bullying, Tessa?
I think you eat at your own pace. It shouldn't really matter.
Stand your ground. Be confident. You eat how you eat. Don't judge. Don't judge me. Dave, your thoughts on that one?
Well, I was just thinking of this wedding that I went to one time in the Middle East. They have a totally different approach to eating. And
well, Ron was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, I'm looking over at him, and it's incredibly fast. You've got basically everyone eats out of the same large communal portion.
Even if they have bed bugs? Because that's wrong.
Oh, yeah. They'll do that.
Okay.
Imagine like 100 or so all party guests get together, and you've got 13 goats just sitting out on a bed of rice. And I've seen them skeletalize 13 goats in 5 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So maybe it is have to do with the company you keep.
Yeah, a little bit.
Dan says, look around, see how things are going. If it's a rip-roaring good time, you better jump in. Yeah, lest you be made fun of.
Just watch
or
your fingers.
Miss out on goats.
Yeah, or exactly. People talk about you years later on the radio because you're finicky eating. here's what Secular's advice is. You're both right. If you eat so slowly that the rest of the people at your table must wait for you to finish, ask them to proceed with their dessert and coffee so they won't have to sit there and watch you masticate. And wolfing down one's food causes some people to overeat, which is why weight loss specialists advise against it. I guess that's helpful. Here we go. we're going to get the... Hey, Pants, I didn't say... No, okay, hold on.
That word means to chew, by the way.
Yeah, that's how
much you chew.
Talking about Jesus on this show, cadavers and whatnot. incidentally, the chat is defending himself, saying he was not saying that he was going to date the 13-year-old. It was the second scenario where the woman was now 26, in which...
he knew she was 13.
The chat is now interesting.
I happen to be friends with him on Facebook, and most of his friends are 13.
Yeah, yeah. It's an intellect thing, not so much a age thing. Here we go. Last question of the night. Yeah, that's not a good one. That one's lame. What do people hand out for baby congratulatory? Fathers used to hang out cigars.
Oh, yeah.
Frowned on. Mm-hmm. What do they hand out now? Anybody? Got any idea?
No idea.
Text messages.
Free text
messages.
That's
message. What I did.
You say, here's a free text message. Dead or it's
no,
my
I
mind.
Sent out text messages
okay,
to everyone.
I see.
I don't think we did. We might have bought some bubblegum thing, cigars or something, just to be silly. But
yeah, still, that's it, though, huh? Yeah.
Gron, what did you do when Elijah was born?
What did I do?
Yeah.
I was happy.
I was happy?
I gave out happiness. What more do you want? Yeah.
Look at me, I'm happy.
You got joy to the world.
Okay, we might tag this on real quick. Okay, it says, I'm a 14-year-old girl. Uh-oh. Keep yourself in check there. I'm a 14-year-old girl who's having a disagreement with my parents about Danny. Then there's this guy, Connor, who likes me, and I'm very comfortable with him. His older sister and I are good friends. The trouble is, my parents have strict rules against dating, and I think it's unfair. I think I'm mature enough to date, and I know right from wrong. My friends say I'm very mature for my age. Well, yeah, they're the best counsel. And they approve of Connor because he's friendly and has an outgoing personality. So does Bernie Madoff. I have tried talking to my parents about this, but I always ended up in tears. Can you tell me how I can convince them to give this guy a chance? I'm very interested in Secular's answer, but let's hit the stage, fellas. What do you think?
14. She's too young.
Yeah, I'm still going to say she's too young.
Her self-analysis is incorrect.
Yeah. These are not good. These are not good indications of your ability to date.
Yeah. I am very mature. Look at me.
Yeah.
My friends say so. All of my 14-year-old friends think I don't even act like a 14-year-old.
Yeah. I am wise beyond my years.
Yeah. I act like a 16-year-old. And I hang out with my 14-year-old potential boyfriend's 16-year-old sister.
Yeah.
You know? I have older friends, so I must be mature for my age.
Here's where the parents have made a mistake, right? Like they didn't set the perspective down, right? Like when they're five, especially with girls, when they're about five, you say, you will not be dating until you're 16, 17, whatever, set an age and call it what it is, right? If you say like 19, you're being kind of a jerk. You know, they have to grow up sometime.
They need to be able to have you as a feedback person, assuming you've built that relationship.
Yeah.
So if they're making mistakes or... You know, you need to guide them a little bit through that. So
yeah, they shouldn't.
That's why we said 16.
They shouldn't be so interested in starting their dating relationship to get away from you, right?
Yeah.
That's not the point of dating. And so, like, and here's what I've done. I've tricked both of my younger my younger daughters into I get to pick their husband. One of them wanted the Kindle from the car, and I said, "Well, I will go get it if I get to pick your husband." And they said, "Deal." Three years old, in writing.
Yeah.
That one's done.
Awesome.
The other one wanted some chocolate milk from the gas station, and I said, "Well, if I get to pick your husband, I suppose I'll get that chocolate milk for you." They said, that's a deal. So we set the age at 16, and they won't start dating till 16, and then I get to pick them. I feel like I've got this straightened right up. In fact, my three-year-old asks me every day.
I can't see how that can go south for you, Mike.
I know. Every day. Solid. She asks me every day. She says, Dad, are you sure you're going to find me a husband? I said, absolutely. I'll find you the guy. Or you can find him, and I'll tell you whether he's going to work or not.
I'll vet him for
you. All right, Mike, let me ask you a question. What are you looking for, then?
In a man?
Yeah.
Well, he's got to be, first of all, he's got to have looks.
Got to be popular.
He's got to be popular.
Right.
Yeah.
And he has to love Jesus.
Yeah.
Those are the three things I'm looking for. If either of those, if he's got bed bugs, we can negotiate. I feel like Jesus can handle that. Yeah. And so, that's not a game ender for me, you know? I'm kind of dreading that area of their life. Maybe, you hear a lot of horror stories, but, I've seen a lot of relationships blossom that did not start with Jesus, right? My own personal marriage started that way. We were not following Christ. And we met Jesus, and it was fine, right? So sometimes it's hard for me to say, I've been thinking about it a little bit. Like, I'll tell my girls that you cannot, spend time with a boy who does not know Jesus Christ, right? I feel like I'm just going to have to pray on that and cross that bridge when I get there. I don't know the answer to it. I feel like I'm going to, side pretty hard on, I expect a certain amount out of a man when he's going to take my daughter anywhere. But, like, I also know that, that I wouldn't trade my marriage for anything. It did not start out like that. And God blessed it. So I feel like that's kind of a different conversation that you as parents will have to have, what your line's going to be and what you're going to accept. But certainly, I feel like this whole problem is totally absolved if the parents would have said, look, you start dating when you're 16. It's not a negotiable rule. We're not going to negotiate that. It's just the deal. And I hear a lot of teenagers, they because I'm in the youth group, they like to talk about this stuff. They're like, my parents' rules are unfair. I'm like, move out. But I'm only blah, 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 17, 18 years old. I'm like, get a job and move out. Well, they won't let me go to the blah, blah, blah. I'm like, seriously, get a job and move out if you don't like it. Other than that, you still live there. What do you want me to say, right? Yeah. Like, if you were able to take up responsibility for your own doings, you do that. Obviously, you're not able to do that,
right.
So you still live there. And, like, I'm in no way advocating that you bust out from your parents at 17, but, like, listen, if you don't like we're talking trivial matters. Like, my mom won't let me stay late at the football game. Move out, right? Like, get a job, get your own place, set your own rules, and move out, right? Now, if we're talking about, like, you want to sell drugs, that's a different conversation, right? But, like, if it's just over parental, rules, you live at their house, that's it. That's the end of discussion, right? There's no sway to be had. I don't care if your mom yells at you five times a day and makes you clean your room when you're 17. You still live there, right? It's their house.
Right.
So, they should have just set the rules up a little bit stauncher, I think. What are your thoughts on that, Tessa?
I agree with setting, like, an age. I do think she's too young to be dating.
Sure.
I know not too long ago when I was that age.
Right. You weren't too young. You were the right age, you thought.
I did. When I was that age, I was...
Yeah. Corey and Jake both came to the door. He said, I'm handsome.
Wow.
Exactly. No, but I mean, I'm glad I didn't... I waited.
Yeah.
I guess, to start dating. That way I understood it more, and I knew more about me and what I was looking for. I mean, I know I'm still 16 and so young and stupid, but...
Right.
Was still more mature than 13 and 14.
I tell you what, though, that also helps you as a daughter to have a lot less stress. Mm-hmm. When you're in fourth grade and everybody's dating everybody and we're going together this week and that week and there's all this drama going on, it's easy as, well, it's my dad's fault, he won't let me date. You know, and as much as they didn't really necessarily like it, it was also very much a protection for them. I think they appreciated that boundary. Mm-hmm. It's like...
That's true. It always gives them an out. Say, sorry, my dad said no.
And they learn. You've got to learn how to tell a guy no. I mean, if a guy asks you out and you're not, and it's just not what you're looking for, you got to be able to gracefully let him down. And so they've had practice.
Especially if he's a bird.
But maybe get to see what happens when you say no. I mean, some people deal with that poorly. And, it's like that.
I don't want to open up another can of worms here. But, like, here's the thing, fellas. Like, you ask the lady out. I don't care if that's old or traditional or whatever, but, like, if you can't roast up even enough, stones to go up and ask a woman out, like, seriously, will you just do that? Like, is this going to be your whole life? You're going to be cowered away and hide from ladies, Like, she deserves at least that. Hey, I think you look all right. I feel like we could get along. Do you want to go to, like, get some coffee with me or something? And they say no. And you're like, fail. Okay, I guess I'm out. It's nice to meet you, you know? Yeah. If you can't even do that, I can't imagine how thin your skin is. Right? You have a lot of important things to do, none of the least of which is talking to people about Jesus. And if you can't handle even the rejection of a human woman that you've just run into, you're going to have a real hard time getting anything done, right? You've got to be able to have a little bit thicker skin than that.
Yeah. Now, I'll tell you what, I even though I have had a firm rule of 16, have two daughters, I actually broke it with my youngest daughter because the guy came to me and asked me first.
Yeah.
And I already knew him, and he was a Christ follower, and the guy impressed me so much. I mean, and it wasn't like a, you know, Leave It to Beaver, you know, Eddie Haskell, hey, Mr. Hudson. I mean, you know, it was a real deal. And I just thought, you know what, they were both very mature, you know. It was just like, they can handle this. Yeah. And they have. They've handled it quite well. They're just not the typical, you know, teenage...
Rebel rousers.
Exactly. And so... It, you know, you also have to engage your brain a little bit, you know, and have some wisdom, I guess. I don't know if that was wise or not, but I mean, it just seemed okay, and it turned out it has been okay. So
yeah, parent your kids, be an active parent, you'll figure it out.
Yeah,
here we go. Here's the final advice. Here, Secular says a sure way to show your parents you're mature enough to date would be to show them you're a responsible person. Do they know when they ask you a question that they'll get an honest answer with no evasion? Have you shown them that you respect their curfews? Do you do the chores that are expected of you without having to be reminded? Is the same true about your homework? If the answer to these questions is yes, then do they know Connor? Do they know his parents? If they do, they might feel more comfortable about your seeing him, if it's in a group rather than one-on-one. I think that's a decent comment.
Yeah.
I think that's legitimate. Okay. You're listening to Live from the Path on livefromthepath.org. We're coming at you every Monday night from 10 to 11. I'd like to thank our special guests, Dave and Guaran. Thank you for being on the program, fellas. That crazy goat-eating story, that's the highlight of my night, buddy.
Yeah.
Highlight. Next week, here's the deal.
We're going to have goat next week.
I have. I personally have goats. I was going to have you guys over for dinner, but not after that story. My goats are pets. We love them. Anyway, I have no idea what's going on next week. Ben Foose is going to be back running the captain's chair. I will honestly, this is no joke, praise Jesus to be relieved of this duty is not my strong suit. Hopefully John Buva will be back in the studio so we can get more of his commentary. And, I think we're going to have one heck of a show. Just a review on what we got going on. And I hope we'll see you next week. You're listening to Live from the Path.